Man, it'd be nice if curing depression was as simple as just swallowing a pill. But unfortunately, the reality is way more complicated because mental health is deeply entwined with social, economic, and political conditions. And Secretary of Health and Human Services Robert F. Kennedy Jr. agrees. The only problem is that his solution appears to be things like getting rid of antidepressants, outlawing yellow number 5, maybe sending folks with addiction to mental health farms. While RFK Jr. has no formal medical training. Again, the guy in charge of Health and Human Services has no formal medical training.
And we're asking ourselves, how in the world did this happen?
And he wrote his family name into power. He's now the chair of Make America Healthy Again, or MAHA, tasked with executing its vision for a healthier, stronger America.
That's what we mean by MAHA, Make America Healthy Again.
Among MAHA's major goals, tackling chronic disease, including mental illness.
My commitment to you is that we're going to make chronic disease our top priority.
As well as investigating the efficacy of standard mental health treatments. Now, the Trump administration released an executive order that aims to assess the prevalence and threats of common pharmaceutical treatments like antidepressants, antipsychotics, mood stabilizers, and stimulants. Guess how many of those I have in my system right now in the comments for a chance at winning a prize. RFK Jr. has questioned whether antidepressants are being overprescribed, particularly to children. And he's also recently claimed from his personal experience that withdrawal from SSRIs, commonly prescribed for major depressive disorder, is more difficult than withdrawal from addictive recreational drugs.
Listen, I know people, including members of my family, who've had a much worse time getting off of SSRIs than they did than people have getting off of heroin.
You know, stuff like the crack that he famously passed around in his basement while he was also liquefying mice in a blender to feed to pet hawks. All of those are real things that he allegedly did. Now, experts have qualified this claim. Yes, quitting antidepressants cold turkey is a very bad treatment plan, but
it doesn't mean they're like heroin. You just need to be monitored and guided through this process, so it's slow and thoughtful.
RFK Jr. has also questioned whether there is a link between these medications and school shootings, which experts have also shut down. Guys, if you're not American, this is how rad of a country we are. We have like the most school shootings anywhere. But the response to that isn't like, maybe we should limit access to guns. It's like, maybe we should take mental health care away from kids. That'll help stop the school shootings. Not the whole gun thing. The logical leaps that MAHA and RFK Jr. are making on mental health treatment are honestly simplistic and potentially harmful, but stay with me for a second here. He's not 100% wrong. You know, we should rethink how we understand and treat mental illness. Many have criticized Big Pharma for financially incentivizing the overprescribing of drugs. It's also worth taking things a step further and asking, why do 17% of US adults depend to some extent on a prescription for their mental well-being? You know, what does it mean that 1 in 4 US adults experience a diagnosable mental disorder every year? If so many people are mentally suffering and relying on medication, is medicine the only thing to reconsider?
RFK Jr. is totally right that we need to be looking at what have been the consequences of letting the pharmaceutical industry just run unchecked.
And even if a lot of his solutions sound batshit, some of them are kind of right, but for the wrong reasons. Because mental health is way more socially and politically constructed than the Trump administration would ever admit. But to make sense of MAHA's radical stance on mental health, we need to understand how we all ended up anxious and depressed in the first place. Tuck in, guys. This is going to be an uplifting journey. Okay, before we keep going, I want to tell you about today's sponsor, Storyblocks. Now, Storyblocks is the complete stock solution that provides unlimited downloads of diverse and high-quality media for one predictable subscription cost. So you can say goodbye to expensive paperclip pricing. Now, Storyblocks' curated stock library has everything that you need to create high-quality video all in one place with over 1 million 4K and HD clips, templates, music, sound effects, images, and more. As generative AI continues to grow as a creative tool, their restock program celebrates the craft of filmmaking. Storyblocks has partnered with talented artists to create 10 exclusive collections of footage that capture the genuine human experience with stories and emotions that AI simply can't replicate. Many other stock providers make licensing expensive and complicated, which is why Storyblocks has clear-cut licensing that gives you lasting protection with the best legal coverage available. Now, to get started with unlimited stock media downloads at one set price, head to storyblocks.com/wisecrack or click the link in the description. Again, that is storyblocks.com/wisecrack or click the link in the description. We love Storyblocks, and we hope that you will too. But for now, let's get back to the show. Debates around how to treat mental illness are nothing new, and our understanding of mental health struggles has transformed multiple times over the past century. Now, after the World Wars, the U.S. Army developed a formal classification system to describe and treat symptoms of veterans reeling from war-related trauma and PTSD. By 1952, the first Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Disorders, or DSM, was published in conjunction with an international classification system published by the World Health Organization. So as the U.S. population expanded and the economy boomed, more and more research and funding went to understanding mental disorders and how to treat them. In 1956, Congress passed the Health Amendments Act, which provided grant money to research mental health. And soon after, RFK Jr.'s uncle, John F. Kennedy, signed a bill just weeks before his assassination that increased federal support for outpatient mental health services. The goal was to get people out of mental institutions and asylums and into less isolated and more community-integrated care. Ever since, the default treatment has become therapy and, where needed, psychopharmacology. More and more research has also identified biological causes of mental disorders, resounding with the medical model, which focuses on physical causes of disorder and less on social and environmental factors. But there's a lot to criticize regarding medical models. Having depression is not the same as having a staph infection. It's not caused by bacteria that can be combated with antibiotics. Rather, mental health is the product of complex interplays and how an individual copes with their surroundings. While properly managed medication is often helpful, especially for severe mental illness, it's not the only treatment for anyone struggling psychologically. And while each individual carries genetic predispositions, the surroundings they find themselves in are shaped by social, environmental, and economic factors. You know, it's not nature versus nurture, but rather the two working together. So, why doesn't the HHS treat it this way? Well, many have suggested that individualizing and medicalizing mental health obfuscates the psychological, social, and material conditions from which psychological distress emerges. Take depression. Let's say you experience distress around feeling zero motivation to do anything. You got low mood, trouble with sleep, a perennial sense of existential dread and guilt, and you're feeling this way nearly every 2 days for 2 weeks or more. Now, with a profile like this, you would certainly meet criteria for a major depressive episode. If this has happened more than once, you might then meet criteria for major depressive disorder. I apologize for anyone who heard that and just thought to themselves for the first time, oh my God, maybe I'm depressed. But does this just mean that you have like a depressive brain or something? Or could there be something more complex going on here? Well, diagnosing and treating mental illness is important, but it's also important to look at the factors surrounding the condition. Clinical psychologist Lucy Johnstone argues that over-medicalized and individualized conceptions of mental illness not only oversimplify understandings, but could also pathologize healthy reactions to harmful conditions. Quote, whether we find a mental health diagnosis empowering, a source of solace, a means to an end, painfully stigmatizing, or ultimately empty, it's worth considering whether one of the greatest successes of the neoliberal project has been the neat separation of mental ill health or psychological suffering from political consciousness. To put this in different terms, what they're basically saying is, maybe sometimes when you feel really bad, it's because the world sucks. Like maybe stuff's really bad externally and that leads to you feeling a type of way. And it's not just like, oh, your chemicals are off. Maybe it's like, oh, the world outside is collapsing and you don't know how to cope with that psychologically. Maybe that's what they're saying is happening. Maybe that's the thing that happens to some of us sometimes all the time, especially right now. Now, this isn't to downplay how meaningful a mental health diagnosis can be in understanding ourselves and our experiences. It's just that on their own, they can distract us from broader factors contributing to those conditions. Dr. Johnstone and her colleagues use the power threat meaning framework, which aims to offer a conceptual alternative to diagnostic models from medical perspectives.
So this is just a way of doing it, which doesn't involve any longer putting people in diagnostic boxes, which have been invented by professionals.
There's also the anti-psychiatry movement, which has criticized the field for arbitrariness in diagnostic categories and peddling of medical treatments when socioeconomic solutions would bring longer-term benefits. This isn't to say that psychiatry and medicine aren't valuable tools in the diagnosis and treatment of mental illness, especially when used in conjunction with therapy and other interventions. But when we think about it exclusively on an individual level, we might be ignoring the social and political factors contributing to mental health outcomes. Both Ignacio Martín Baró and Frantz Fanon drew links between political consciousness and mental health. Martín Baró is associated with the field of liberation psychology, which seeks to understand and address the psychological impacts of oppressive systems, arguing that trauma is the concrete crystallization in individuals of aberrant and dehumanizing social relations. He believed that we can't separate individual mental health struggles from the broader social order, and that psychologists treating patients should also be considering bigger issues like war and other human rights violations, with the goal ultimately being to construct a new person in a new society. And more, we're seeing the limitations of over-medicalized understandings of mental health. And although it's great that mental distress and disorders have been taken more seriously and seen less as moral failings, especially since the pandemic, we can't stop there. Our material and social conditions contribute to our mental health. So in all of this, some of RFK Jr.'s proposals, chiefly regarding the use of psychiatric medications, are worthwhile to consider.
They're drugged into oblivion because they're having behavioral problems and essentially no one has any time to deal with them, and they don't want to, and they're going to find some really, really bad things.
However, RFK Jr.'s new mandate offers individualistic solutions to structural problems, something that's all too common in neoliberal policy. For example, the MAHA website focuses on the roles of poor metabolic health and inflammation in mental disorders, but focusing only on diet and environmental toxins ignores things like poverty or social isolation. At the same time, he works for an administration diametrically opposed to long-term society-wide policies that might help mental health struggles, such as universal health care, universal basic income, walkable communities, healthier social relationships, a meaningful and well-compensated job, you know, all the stuff that we all want all the time. And this is especially egregious when recent studies show a clear correlation between socioeconomic conditions and mental health disorders. So while RFK Jr. may have identified real problems with our system of mental health care, his solutions leave much to be desired. And we can be certain that restricting access to psychiatric medications while not offering comprehensive social solutions is only going to exacerbate the growing mental health crisis. But hey, at least we'll all be eating beef tallow fries to cope with the deep emptiness in our souls. That's all for this one. Thanks for watching. Please do leave a comment, like, and subscribe. We have a Patreon community. There's a link in the description. Check that out if you have a sec. And thanks so much for your support. I'll see you next time.